grad student. Happy February! For those of you who do not follow me on Twitter, you're probably wondering why there wasn't an episode last week. I got COVID! Perks of dating an ER nurse, am I right? Don't worry though, Luke and I are both okay. I'm just having some lingering fatigue and I needed last week to recover. But we're back. And today's episode has a lot of exciting stuff going on. First, it is the first episode of the month of February. That means it is time to thank all of the podcast patrons with big podcast energy and up for their support of the podcast. And some of these people I'm about to mention have been supporting the podcast on Patreon for a whole year. Wow, thank you. And big thank you to William Oda, Ryan Science, Lee Goose, Jeremy Gloger, Emmeline Beltran, my mom, Davis Bourne, Brittany Hockey. Special shout out to podcast fellows Isaac Bisla and Brianna Williams, and a huge podcast patron welcome to Eric Aurelian, who is a new patron with Big Podcast Energy. Welcome, Eric, and thank you so much for the support. Plus, a huge, huge, huge thank you and shout out to Vikram Baliga, another podcast patron with Big Podcast Energy, who is the guest for today's episode. If you want to join this amazing group of people, you can check out all of your options at patreon.com/deargradstudent. I also have a huge announcement. Today's episode is the first of many that has been edited by Dear Grad Student's new editor, Coral Arroyo. Coral has been a huge fan of the podcast since the very beginning. She is someone who DM'd me about the podcast like the very first day I announced it on Twitter. And she's a podcast editor for another podcast, which you can also check out if you're like me and you like nerdy stuff. That podcast is called Outdated References, and I'll have it linked below. You can find Coral on Twitter at Coral_Arroyo. That's CORAL_ARROYO. Please go ahead, give her a follow, and thank her for her amazing work and time and energy spent on the podcast. Okay, my last announcement is actually back to the whole I took an unexpected week off because of the whole COVID thing. Originally, I planned to have an episode this month about being Black in grad school like I did last year in honor of Black History Month in the US. But my entire recording and release schedule got changed because of taking time off from being sick. So there's not an episode coming out about that this month. But I have had a few episodes on this topic in the past, and I've had some amazing Black students on the podcast to talk about all different kinds of things. I'm going to link all of them below, and you should also check out Twitter for a big thread of these episodes so that you can retweet it and highlight those amazing Black academics. Okay. Once again, I've been talking way too long in the episode intro, so let's jump into today's episode. Today's episode is all about non-tenure-track academic jobs with the host of the Planthropology podcast and my good friend and podcast patron, Vikram Baliga. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to your favorite grad school podcast, Dear Grad Student, the podcast where grad students can come together to celebrate, commiserate, and support one another through this long and difficult journey. I'm Alana. I'm a fifth-year doctoral student and your host, and I'm joined today by a lecturer of horticulture and greenhouse manager studying plants in the environment, particularly focusing on urban water conservation and multipurpose landscapes, and the host and producer of Planthropology and the Plant Prof podcast, and a longtime podcast supporter of Dear Grad Student and podcast patron, Vikram Baliga. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I can't tell you how excited I am to finally get to chat with you, like face-to-face, whatever.
Yes.
Like over Zoom, whatever.
Well, and we were just saying before we started officially jumping into this that we know each other's voices from our podcast. We've spoken online so much that we jumped in without being like, oh my God, nice to meet you. Like what? Yeah.
The internet's weird.
Oh my God, it's so weird. It's fantastic though. Well, why don't we go ahead and tell people where they can find you on the internet? I know there's a million places. I think that your intro just beat the length of Raven the Science Maven's intro. Like, was so much to say. Yes. So take that as an honor. You can put it on your website.
I do.
Yes.
I will.
So why don't we tell people where they can find you online?
So too many places. I am unfortunately very available on the interwebs. My podcast is called Planthropology. So it's anthropology with PL on the front. I like to make up words. But I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We have a Facebook group called Planthropology's Cool Plant People. Mm-hmm. I am on TikTok as at the Plant Prof, for better or worse.
For better. Let me tell you all. You all need to go follow Vikram on TikTok. Here's the thing. I don't have a TikTok because I'm trying to not ruin my life through quals. However, you post most of them to Twitter and they light up my life. Everyone go follow Vikram on TikTok, especially the most recent one that I've seen. And I don't know when this episode's coming out, so it'll be old news by then, but you can go scrolling through his TikTok to find it. The engaged couple where you were just like, why don't you tell that story just briefly?
Okay. So I'm leaving. So we're recording this on a Saturday morning. I'm leaving work. It's like 5:20 yesterday, Friday afternoon. And I walk out, and so part of my job, I manage horticultural gardens on campus here at Texas Tech. We've got about 2.5 acres of garden. So we regularly have photographers and events and all kinds of stuff going on out here. So I walk out and I see a sign, but I can only see the back of it. I'm like, okay, it's weird. So I'm like, okay, I should see what's on the sign. There's a basketball game going on across the street, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So it's a picture of an engagement ring and it just says, Kaylin, this way. And so I was like, I cannot pass this up.
Right.
So I made a TikTok saying pretty much, oh, hey, look, Kaylin's getting engaged. And I was like, if I follow these signs, will this bro propose to me? Is it just whoever shows up? Or does it have to be Kaylin? I'm married. I've been married for 11 years, but I don't know. I've never been asked to I've never been proposed to. It might be nice.
I was just dying. You're literally like, this could be really nice for me. And I was just watching that and I was just like, this is amazing. This is fantastic content. Like, this is what I need from an academic. Also, I have to say I'm really proud of myself for pronouncing horticulture correctly.
Yeah.
I thought about it for a second, but I don't think that I hesitated. So it's going to be a good day. I feel like that's
good.
You know that TikTok of is it a bones day? Like, I was able to pronounce all the words right. So it's a bones day for me.
It's a bones day for sure. Right. For sure.
Well, why don't we go ahead and jump into talking a little bit about your background, your research. We will be talking today about your experience as a non-tenure track faculty member, getting this job, all of the above. And so in order to do so, I think that people need to understand your field because our fields are very different. And so that's going to matter a lot for what we talk about. But I think also I recently had an episode come out, or maybe it's coming out on Monday, about non-academic jobs. But non-tenure track jobs are academic jobs. They're just non-tenure. And so it's like there's so many layers of this, and so many people request episodes for anything that's not tenure track, just to get a sense of what else is out there.
Sure.
So I'm super excited to have you. Let's back up. Tell me a little bit about what you research, what you do, et cetera.
Sure. So I have lived most of my life in Texas, and actually all my life in Texas. And water is a big deal here. Like water conservation, water rights, water use, everything that has to do with water availability is a big deal. So throughout my whole career, I have focused in one way or the other on water. So I actually started off in my undergrad at Texas A&M as a biomedical engineering major because I was out of my freaking mind.
I'm going to change the world. Dance.
Yeah. Ooh, oops. There's blood and there's calculus. And I don't like either of those things. So
amazing.
My granddad was a doctor, a medical doctor. And so I was like, oh, that's really what I want to do. And
right.
After I realized that that was not for me, and actually after the
same
School of Engineering at Texas A&M was like, maybe this isn't for you. I was like, okay. So this is an aside, and I'm sorry, I chase rabbits. I'm a podcaster. I can't help it.
Same.
For those of you struggling in school, my first semester of college, I was on academic probation with a 1.5 GPA.
That's right.
I dropped 3 classes. I failed calculus. I failed something else that I just quit going to because I was 18. I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And then I just, you know, last December got my PhD. So
hey,
there are roadblocks we hit and you're fine. Just don't give up. Just keep moving.
I feel like I need a tattoo that literally says you're fine. Just to remind myself at all times.
It'll be
all
right.
Fine.
But anyway, so long story short, I kind of switched to horticulture. I actually have a Bachelor of Arts in horticulture in landscape design.
Oh my God.
And then I did a Master of Science studying olive trees and water conservation in olive orchards.
Oh my gosh.
And then I just finished my PhD in urban landscape water conservation.
That is reminding me a little bit, but not a lot, of William Oda, who I had a podcast episode with about science policy, because he does research in fish in California, but it's all about how they are letting, I don't know, is it like processed water back into the environment and the rate at which they do it? And just like California has a similar water problem from what I know. So hearing you, I'm kind of like, I have some background. Like I know something.
It's cool. Well, and it's a big issue. And so as I go through my career, I have tried to figure out what do I find important. I have come at things interesting ways. And it's like, you know, I think a lot of times it's like, oh, what is there funding available for? What is the thing right now that we're doing? Well, it so happens that water is a thing we're doing nationally, but especially in Texas. The USDA, the EPA, the Texas Council for, oh God, goodness, TCEQ, whatever that stands for. There's always another acronym.
Sure.
Are all about water availability, water quality, all that. But I think about if people want to keep living in the state, which some people do and some people don't for a variety of reasons, we have to have water. And for industry, for quality of life, both rural and urban, groundwater, surface water availability is a big deal. So for me, you know, you mentioned in the intro that, you know, I'm interested going forward in multi-purpose use of our space. So how do we turn the urban landscape into not just something that is pretty, but something that's productive and equitable? So through community gardens, public green spaces, food forests in the middle of cities, how do you landscape in a way that's aesthetic and raises your property value, does all the things that a landscape is supposed to do. But hey, you also get tomatoes. And if you need some extra cash, you could go sell stuff at a farmer's market. Right. So for me, resource conservation is more than just how do we use less water and more how do we use our land, our water, our fertilizers, everything else that goes into a landscape more efficiently. And for me, that's get more than one benefit out of it.
Wow. Yeah, I was just going to say, it just sounds all like efficiency and like improving the way that we're interacting with nature, especially in urban spaces. So I've only been to Texas one time and I was there for a wedding. I drove past Waco and saw the big sign of Magnolia, you know, the whole nine. And that's my only experience with Texas. But you're not the first person on the podcast from Texas, but you are the first person to mention this water thing. Like, I do feel like this is kind of news for me. And it's interesting because I've always known you as the plant person. And maybe it's because I'm not in environmental science even a little bit, but I like never connected that automatically means that there is like this understanding of water and like just natural resources and like a climate change way as well.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there are a lot of climate change is so complicated.
Yeah.
It's such a big thing, but one of the ways we can battle that is by improving green space through a variety of things, right? Whether it's a community garden, a park, a rooftop garden, whatever. Right. Breaking up heat islands in urban centers, making sure we're keeping canopy cover on the land to, you know, reduce erosion, improve water availability, all kinds of stuff. So plants are integral in all that, but we can't grow plants if we don't have the water and the space and the resources we need for that. So it's sort of this big integrated issue that, you know, most of my work to this point has been on the individual side.
Sure.
You know, how do you in your own landscape save water, improve your environment, X, Y, and Z? Some of the work that I'm trying to get into, we're working on a grant right now, is going to be focusing more on the public and municipal policy side. How do we influence statewide policy, nationwide policy to not only incentivize and help people do the personal responsibility end of it, but on a grander scale, how do we affect the overall environment, overall political, social, physical environment to improve our resource availability.
Whoa. You definitely should listen to William's episode if you haven't. He has like a million resources. He's also a patron. You guys are both patrons, so something in common. But yeah, I think that that is so relevant, I feel like, in the here and now. And so I do want to know then, how did plant anthropology start? Can you give me a little, what's your origin story, if you will? Like, how did that become, you know, you're a podcaster too.
Yeah, I was writing a dissertation and I didn't want to.
this is a great synopsis.
Yeah. So anyway, that was part of it. I was like, okay, I need to do literally anything else except stare at this Word document, right?
Incredible.
I was having a conversation with a friend one day up here at the greenhouse, and we were talking about nerdy plant stuff. I was like, this would make a great podcast. People would listen to this. And then we both laughed because we were like, no, they wouldn't. And then like months later, we were interviewing for a new department chair in our department. And he was talking about different ways of doing outreach and science communication and getting our message out there. And he mentioned podcasts, and that was already in my brain somewhere. So I was like, shoot, I'm doing it. They didn't fire me, which was good. Same. Yeah. And yet they have not fired me yet.
Right. Still time.
Give it a month. I don't know. But my department and college have been very supportive of it. They have worked it into my job description. So I'm working right now, which is weird.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
It's been really a cool thing. I just wanted to tell the story, one, of cool people in the sciences and what they're doing. Try to give people a little bit more appreciation for nature and the environment. But also, I think the story we don't tell our students sometimes is the now what part of it. So it's like, oh, I'm going to teach you everything there is to know about soil. Cool. Great. I know
right.
Everything about soil. Okay. Then you graduate at 22 and it's like, what the hell am I supposed to do now? Right. Like,
right.
So I wanted to interview people at all different stages of their career and their lives about why they're still passionate about the things they do. And we can maybe try to fill in a little bit of that. Now what, what's the point kind of piece.
Right. And just a sneak peek for those of you, maybe the episode's already out, but I will be on Plantthropology. So you can listen to that episode. I don't know what episode number. I don't know if you know what episode number, but I can guarantee that it's happening. very sure that it is. So you can go ahead and look for that. I'll link it in the episode description as soon as it's available. Why don't we go ahead then and jump into the episode? So I've already prefaced that you are a non-tenure track faculty member. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
they're basically like, we like you, but not a lot.
Yeah, no that's pretty kidding. Much
but
it.
It's, like, you can it's stay. Like, we like you, but we don't want to give you job security that will literally like bulletproof job security. But like, please work for us.
Yeah, it's weird. So I run our teaching and research greenhouse, as well as our horticultural gardens. And that's half of my job. And then I have a 50% teaching appointment too. So I, you know, teach and oversee our introductory horticulture course. We teach about 350 to 400 students a semester in this course.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we have three lecturers, five or six TAs. We run about 16 labs every semester. So I oversee that. And then I run this place.
I feel like, has it gotten more popular as plants have become like trendy?
Yeah. You know, it's a core science class here at Texas Tech.
Oh, that's so cool.
Instead of taking biology, chem, whatever, you can take intro to horticulture.
What?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh my God. You're changing lives. 100%. I mean, truly, like there are students who are not like crying every day because that class is offered like instead of biology or chem. Oh my God. That sounds amazing.
You know, we try to make it fun. The labs are real hands-on. They're fun. They get to play with plants, grow plants. We, you know, it's real science.
Right.
But it's very applied science. And so outside of the exam unit on photosynthesis and cell biology, which everyone gives me dirty looks about, everything's real applied. And so it's a fun class.
In terms of the administrative side or the fancy part, like, do you see a real difference in being non-tenure track?
In some ways, yes. So I don't have a research appointment,
okay,
which is interesting. So, you know, as far as chasing grants, publishing, all of that, that's not in my job evaluation.
Oh, you just do it for fun.
Just for funsies. Yeah. Now, they're always happy if I'm doing those things.
I'm sure they are.
they're not going to tell me no.
Right.
But I'm not evaluated on that.
Got it.
And so it's an interesting position where I'm sort of more on an annual review sort of basis instead of the 3 and 6 year kind of normal tenure track kind of thing. There are, how do I say this? I don't care. I'm just going to say it. There are benefits in terms of the overall amount of stress and anxiety that I deal with as a junior faculty member, right? So I'm teaching faculty. I'm not research faculty. I still get to, have to go to faculty meetings, whatever. However you want to
like the first time it's like, ooh, I'm in the club. And the second time you're like, I'm still going to this.
That is exact. And ours are like at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoons.
Yeah, that's what mine are.
Pull my hair out.
Well, I'm not a faculty, but my faculty do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm always like, oh no. Spoken or unspoken, as a junior faculty, you're expected to work a lot.
Right.
And you look at the job requirements, you look at the tenure and promotion requirements and everything. And it's like, how do you accomplish that in less than 60 hours a week? And the answer is you don't. You just don't. And whether anyone's willing to say that or not, as junior faculty, you work a whole heck of a lot.
Right.
And there's benefits, like the pay grade's better, everything, blah, blah, blah. But I enjoy being able to teach. I enjoy being able to do the greenhouse stuff and interact and do podcasts and outreach and all of that. And then, you know, I'm working with a couple of groups on grants and other things right now. So I'm still involved in research, but, you know, I think, as opposed to some of my colleagues who are tenure track, leave work at work a little bit better, right? I go home and I'm not stressing about my next grant deadline or about pushing out another publication. Like I do those things. And maybe to the chagrin of some of the people I work with, it's a little bit slower than others, but I like the role I'm in. What I would really like to work towards is like a professor of practice kind of position, which would be similar with a few changes, but
sure.
It is an interesting thing being non-tenure track faculty for sure.
Yeah. Was that the plan for you coming out of grad school? Did you just happen to land in it? Were you looking like, I want to be non-tenure track. I stopped myself because I'm like, is anyone looking to be non? But I think some people are because there is some flexibility. It can be heavier on teaching. And it can mean that you leave work at work a little bit more. Like all the things you mentioned, there probably are people looking for that. So I didn't mean to pause. I was just like, I don't know anyone who's like, I'm going on the job market for this, but I'm sure there are.
I don't know that that was the plan. Like I think going through, let me back up a bit. When I started working on my PhD in 2015 now, I had a full-time job with the Extension Service. I was a county agent, so I was a community educator. And I sort of got talked into doing the program.
Nice.
And yeah, but it was, you know, my project was water conservation, but it was very like qualitative kind of, what are people doing in the landscape? What are their ethos as far as water use and those kinds of things? So I did a survey-based project for part of my project. So it dovetailed very directly into my job. So I was working full time. I've not been a traditional student. So I would do classes online. The Extension Service was pretty good about working with me there. When I first started, my goal was I'm going to get a PhD early in my career, maybe have some more opportunities within Extension, get a raise just for holding the degree, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then it turned out this opportunity for this job that I'm in now opened up in 2018 or late 2017. And I kind of jumped on it. And I was like, I would love to be able to actually work with plants and play in the garden and teach. And so I don't know that in all honesty, I had a real clear idea of what my career would look like. And I think a lot about if like a tenure track position opened up, would I really pursue it? And I honestly don't know. I might, depending on what it was. But I like what I'm doing. I really enjoy my job.
I love that you like what you're doing. I feel like it's so refreshing. I mean, not that I've had people on here who are like, oh, I hate my life. But like to have someone post PhD who's like, I kind of fell into this and I really like it. I like it so much that a job that pays more with more job security is an I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you really like your, like that's, what hope? what light? But I think that's so great. Like when I had first asked the question and I was like, was this in the plan? And then I was like, was there a plan? And no, and I don't. And I think that a lot of people kind of land that way. I mean, especially in clinical psychology with it being so competitive, like you go into grad school interviews and they're like, what do you want your career to look like? And it is like so directed and like you have to like, you have your 5-10 year plan and like, I feel like I have had that, and it's also changed where I've had less and less of a plan as time has gone on because I've realized that A, it matters a lot less than I realized, and B, everything changes in academia kind of quickly. As slowly as it changes, it also changes quickly. You never know what jobs are available. You never know what's going to come up. You never know what your life is going to look like or what you're going to enjoy doing. And I think, I don't know, I like the message that like you can fall into something and love it. And that's amazing.
Well, and I really have. And I look at my life in terms of how do I have the impact I want to have? And I measure my success the older I get. So I'm in my mid-30s now. And the older I get and the deeper I get into my career, I look at not necessarily what am I achieving? What's my title? How much am I getting paid? All those things are important. But how do I measure my own impact? How do I live my life based on the values I have for myself and the values I want to put into the world versus I have 100 publications or whatever, right? Like those things don't have to be mutually exclusive, but I get to interact directly with hundreds of students a semester, whether I'm teaching them, overseeing the labs. I work with all of the grad students that come through my facility, not necessarily designing their projects, but they come and they ask me technical advice. I joke sometimes that I'm the greenhouse therapist guy because people would just come plop down in my chair and start talking at me.
Amazing.
And I'm like, I don't even know who you are. Like,
what? And you're a podcaster. So like they know they can just talk to you and you'll just talk back at them.
I think so.
Yeah.
But I think of the impact I can have on the scientific community and the academic community at large. And yes, I could go do more publications and pull in more grant money, or I could directly influence the lives of the next generation of academics, of grad students, of people who are going to sit in grant meetings and try to bring their own values and their own identities into the research we're doing. And I feel like, you know, I say that and I don't know how it comes across, but I'm humbled to be able to do that. I'm grateful to be able to, even in a small way, impact the lives of a lot of students, whether I'm directly teaching them in the classroom or not.
Yeah, I mean, that came off as incredibly powerful. I was kind of like, all right, you're just going to casually just be like, I'm impacting the lives of the next generation. But you are. It's interesting hearing you because as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, like that's kind of the difference that I want to make. And I feel like I just had like an existential moment of like, what am I doing writing all these papers? But it's okay. We're going to reel it back because those are going to get me a job in the first place. Hey, time for a quick break to thank today's sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Personal Finance for PhDs Tax Workshop. If you're a grad student who is a U.S. citizen studying in the U.S., feeling stressed out or confused by tax season, you are not alone and your stress is valid. Tax softwares and professional tax preppers don't always know how we are categorized or how to qualify all of our income. Now, this can lead to overpaying our taxes, which obviously we can't afford, or underpaying, which again, we can't afford. Plus, no one wants to deal with penalties from the IRS. Luckily, Dr. Emily Roberts of Personal Finance for PhDs has developed an affordable tax workshop to teach funded grad students how to prepare their annual tax returns without any of that stress. This tax workshop makes it easy to prepare your income and your higher education expense numbers correctly. There are even warnings for common mistakes that students make so that you can avoid them. With this workshop, you get 11 pre-recorded videos and 2 worksheets to work through at your own pace. Plus, your purchase also comes with an invitation to a live Q&A call with Emily for any questions or concerns you may have. And for any Q&A calls you miss, they're posted and you can watch them later. And the best part? You get all of that for under $30. Now, the tax return due date in the U.S. is April 18th, 2022. So if you are interested, now is definitely the time to sign up and just make your life easier. Think of it like preventative self-care. To purchase this workshop, you'll want to go to pfforphds.com/DGSReturn. That's pfforphds.com/DGSReturn. You can also find this link in the episode description. Okay, back to your favorite podcast. I like that you have talked a little bit about mentoring because I think that that's one aspect of non-tenure track jobs that I've just assumed, like, this is not a part of it. Like, if you're non-tenure track, you're probably teaching and they have you in some hole in the wall and then you go home. And that just doesn't seem the case. Now, everyone is different, right? Like, there probably are some non-tenure track jobs where they really just treat them like shit and they don't have a garden to take care of and, you know, all of these beautiful a podcast and things like that. But Tell me a little bit about this mentoring piece. I want to hear a little more about that, because I think that that's not just a unique aspect that improves how enjoyable your job is, but a part of non-tenure track that people maybe don't know exist, that maybe if they are on the job market and they got a non-tenure track job and they're like going over their salary, they're going over their contract, that they maybe could fold in. So tell me a little bit about like your interactions with students and things, some examples maybe.
So there's kind of two parts to this. So in my current position, I'm not technically graduate faculty. It's something we're working on.
Sure.
So I can directly mentor grad students, but I'm sharing a grad student right now with one of our tenure track faculty. So he has an interesting position that he was one of my undergraduate employees. So I employ four to six undergrads out here at the greenhouse, that everything you see here in the greenhouse and the gardens is done by students. I teach them how to do the things and they do them, right? Or they already know how.
Wow.
So he was getting ready to graduate. He was thinking about grad school and he was like, I don't want a TA, but I want an assistantship. I was like, okay. So what we worked out, and I just kind of swung at this with our department chair and said, can we do this? So he's my assistant greenhouse manager.
Oh.
His research assistantship is helping me run this place.
Oh my
gosh.
Then
I'm managing that part of his grad school, whatever. Sure. And then our other faculty members managing his research side. And so I mentor him directly. You know, we turned a closet out here at the greenhouse into an office for him.
Oh, there we go. Someone's in a closet.
Yeah, someone's in a closet. But so I mentor him directly. And then we have five grad students right now that are TAing for my class. And we have a lab director who's a PhD student right now. I kind of work with all of them. So I get to help them figure out how to teach a horticulture lab, and they don't need me. They're great on their own. You know, so I work with them, and then I work with my students as directly as I can. My lecture this semester is 154 students.
Wow.
And so I don't get the FaceTime I necessarily want with all of them, but
sure,
they know that I have an open door policy. Like if I'm here, they can come talk to me about whatever. I had a student come talk to me earlier in the semester. They emailed me and pretty much said, can we just meet? I said, okay. I'd say, well, sure.
I just need to talk to you.
And they pretty much sat down in my office and said, I don't know how to do what I'm doing. Like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm struggling with my mental health, all of those things. And I just said, okay, I can't help with your other classes, but here's what we can do here. Here's, you know, some resources you can look at.
Sure.
I think as mentors, whether in an official capacity or any other capacity, we have to understand that the people we deal with are looking at us, not just for the technical help, not just for that, but just like, how do we survive this weird thing called the human experience? And I think we owe them authenticity and vulnerability and just being honest with, yeah, okay, sometimes it sucks. Like sometimes stuff sucks and it's okay that it does.
Truly.
I don't necessarily have the answers for you, but I understand. I think that goes just as far sometimes as having this big, I don't know, formal way of approaching some stuff. And so I have the opportunity to work with both undergraduate, graduate students, largely indirectly, but it is very nice being able to just be a resource and be available.
Yeah. I mean, I totally identify with that, right? I mean, if that's not what this podcast is, like, I don't know what it is, because I can't formally do anything in my life or theirs to change circumstances unless, you know, I'm like, quit. But it does mean a lot just to, like, sometimes when I have guests on, and this is a great example, things that we've been talking about today, where, you know, they give advice or they say something and I'm like, I need to write that shit down. Like, that's amazing. So I have to imagine that people listening hopefully also have that sort of, they feel that impact. And I know they do because people will message me and stuff. So I totally identify with that. And I think that it's an incredibly valuable piece, right? It's not just like the tangible dissertation, the tangible thesis, or like this paper, but you kind of help mold the way that they take care of their well-being through that, the way that they view themselves through that, the way that they can help themselves through that. And it's like, without that, they're not getting through whatever that thing is. So
wow.
I think it's so valuable. And somehow we are coming to the end of this episode. But before we get there, I just want to give some advice to folks who might be on the job market. I know that your position, you weren't necessarily like applying to 20 places and then like you landed on exactly where you've been because it was so beautiful and wonderful. But Do you have any major like pros or cons that people should be aware of for non-tenure track jobs, or like some brief lessons learned as people are navigating options they have and like visualizing what a future job might look like?
Yeah, sure. So I think the cons, and I'll start there. A lot of them are on a lower pay scale. Just real bluntly, I think that your upside salary-wise is going to be much higher in a tenure track position.
Sure.
I do fine. I'm not going to say that they're, you know, paying me beans, but you know, my colleagues that are tenure track that have similar experience to me are making quite a bit more. And sure. For me, that's fine. But that's something to consider. Yeah. The job security side, like I'm fairly confident in my position because I've taken a lot of things on that I think nobody else wants to do.
Sure.
But this annual review process definitely is a little bit kind of stressful, right? Like, are you still doing your job this year? And the fact that, at least in this position, I won't get tenure and get that, you know, kind of shield between me and unemployment that a lot right. of folks get. But the pros, I think, with a lot of these non-tenure track positions, and maybe this is not universally true, but I've talked to a few other people in similar roles to me, you can kind of mold it a little bit more and figure out like, because they didn't know what to do with my position when I started. I was like, here are the things I would like to be doing. And it's like, okay, some of these things won't work, but some of these things will. Like, again, we worked this podcast in. And so I think there are benefits to not have quite the stringent, here are the benchmarks you have to meet in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years.
Right. Like the flexibility.
Yeah. The flexibility helps a lot for me. That fits my right. personality better. As you have learned, I fly by the seat of my pants 100% of the time.
We are the same.
Maybe this is probably true both in tenure track, non-tenure track. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want.
Love that.
Like, if there's aspects of your job that you're like, hey, this is really not working for me. Like, okay, have that conversation. Find right. a department chair. Find someone to talk to. The answer may be no, that's still part of your job. Oh, okay. But at least you've tried, right?
Yeah.
And that's, if there's anything I've learned through my career, and it's been strange, I've been in industry, I've been in academia, is just ask for what you want. You would be shocked at how often people are willing to actually work with you to
right.
work you into a position that you actually love to go and do.
And I feel like you deserve that. Like, we deserve to do things that we enjoy. I think that there's been this feeling, especially amongst grad students, of like, I have to endure this shitty thing and then XYZ. And maybe in grad school, that's somewhat true because there are a lot of structural components to a PhD that are out of our hands. But I think especially as we think about the job market and a sense of agency that we have over ourselves and our career, that you're exactly right. You might not be able to have something changed, right? Like if you need to ask your department chair for something, but at least having them aware that like, hey, this thing's not going well for me. Like that could be a future change. Maybe you can adjust it. Maybe XYZ could happen. You get someone to help you. I mean, whatever it might be, you just never know. And I think that for your own well-being, you deserve to ask. It can be scary for whatever you might be thinking of as we're talking about this, however it relates to you. I think it's important that you do advocate for yourself. And it's an important skill to learn, I think.
It helps the industry as a whole, right? It right. helps people down the road. If we truly do stand on the shoulders of giants, those giants aren't just publishing. They are changing culture. They are right. Influencing the way we do academia and research and teaching. So right.
even podcasting.
Podcasting. Yeah. I mean, whatever. Like, even if something doesn't directly change for you, the ripples from the question you asked may have larger impacts on the industry and on society as a whole. So don't be afraid to ask. The worst answer you can get is no.
Absolutely. And like, that can feel a little embarrassing, but like you said, like it could send waves. And then like, if you ask for a thing that you need changed, even if you can't get a change, and someone else is like, oh, they asked for their thing, maybe I'll ask for mine too. Like it gives other people permission to also advocate for themselves. So anyways, very valuable. I think that is amazing advice. And so we are moving into final thoughts. Final thoughts, of course, are takeaways or bullet points that you want people to remember from your episode. I always say that final thoughts are like doing my listeners' executive function. I don't want them to do the hard work. And so I want them to remember important bits of what we talked about. This can be on the topic of non-tenure track. This can be some incredible quote that you said, whatever it is that you want them to remember when they're falling asleep at night and they're staring at the ceiling and they're going over their day. What are your final thoughts for the episode, Vikram?
If you have an impact on the world around you, be a real human being.
Say that. Whoa.
I don't know how else to put it, except just...
That's amazing.
I think the biggest thing we owe each other is authenticity. So be a real human being to the people around you.
Wow. Whoa. I know that it was like a very basic statement to say, but I don't know. That just like really hit me. I also feel like that is another piece of this podcast happening for me, is like I needed to be a human being. My final thoughts. Goodness, I always steal them from guests, but I'm not going to steal that one from you. My final thoughts would be, I like the sense of like advocating for yourself, but also I'm having this like takeaway in myself of like, you deserve to enjoy what you do. Like hearing you talk about really loving your job, I'm like inspired by that. I'm like, there's hope in this dark, deep world. Like that's... Okay, like, I think that that's an amazing thing. I feel like another takeaway that I'm having is like, if you want to start a podcast, you should, which is like constantly my takeaway of like, it's super hard work and it's super hard to get people to listen to it, but it's super fun. And I feel like I've enjoyed it. And I know you have, because you have two of them. We didn't even talk about the plant prof.
Yeah, I haven't done that in a while. That was sort of just a side project that I started last year. Again, I think I had defended and submitted my dissertation, and I think I had this void of busyness in my life.
And you were like, let's get busier.
Because yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So I did that for a while and it kind of fell off. And I actually honestly turned it into the TikTok channel.
Yeah.
Because that's way more fun and honestly way easier.
It's also hilarious. Like I that's gonna be another takeaway. Go ahead and follow Vikram on TikTok. And listen to Planthropology and explore the nature spaces in your urban environment so that people keep funding them. That'll be another one. Interact with those so that the city's like, you're right, citizens do like this. It is good. But
I don't know if you realize how important that is.
I don't. I just kind of said
you are 100% right. 100% right. No, you are right on.
Do you want to speak on that for like 10 seconds?
Yeah. Some of the first things to get cut when you look at city budgets is green space, public space, walking trails, parks, whatever, because it's easy to be like, oh, we can't spend the money on water and maintenance, et cetera. Mm. But you have real power as someone who lives in a place to tell your municipality what's important.
Mm.
Go spend time in green spaces. If they're trying to get rid of one, pop down to a city council meeting, be part of a group. I cannot stress how important these green spaces are to our society and to our ecosystems and our planet. So you don't know how right you are about just interact with these green spaces.
Well, I feel very fancy now. I'm just like, yeah, absolutely. I did say that. But also, you know, I am training for a half marathon right now because I enjoy pain. And and one of my favorite places to run is the Arboretum that we have here, which is run by our university. And they have it, which is so genius too. They have the Arboretum laid out where there are two loops that like kind of interact with each other, and they're each exactly a mile, which is so fantastic for actually getting people to go there, because I can run and I know exactly how far I've gone, and like it's a whole thing. And so I think that that's incredible. I'm going to spend more time at my Arboretum, and maybe I'll take a selfie and be like, I'm at the Arboretum. Shout out to Planthropology. Maybe I'll do that. I'll post it on Twitter.
I like it.
Well, why don't we remind people where they can find you online? As we know, there's a million places, but where do you prefer people to connect with you, perhaps?
I probably spend the most time on Twitter these days.
Sure.
So at the Plant Prof, at Planthropology _, because somebody beat me to the regular
Love
one.
That.
And then again, at the Plant Prof on TikTok. Those are probably where these days I spend most of my online time.
Yeah. And then everyone who is a regular listener of the podcast, of course, that will be listed in the episode description. All of the places, even places we did not mention that you can find Vikram, they will be there. And Vikram, let me just take a moment to say, thank you for being a podcast patron. You are one of my first people to be a podcast patron. And as somebody who podcasts, you know what kind of like what support means to podcasters and how incredibly helpful. I mean, it's just like it's a game changer for podcasters when they have that kind of support. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, Alana, I don't know that I've told you this enough, but I really believe in what you're doing. I think this is an important space for academia and even for people looking from the outside in to understand a little bit more of what life is like here. I appreciate your commitment to diversity in your guests, to equity, to just all the stuff that you do day in and day out. I love this podcast, and I really appreciate what you do.
Thank you. That was incredibly kind, and I wasn't ready for it, and now I don't know how to transition. Thank you. I also like your podcast. I feel like, you know what kind of vibes it gives me? It gives me like Great British Baking Show vibes. Do you watch
that?
You
do, and I love that so much.
Okay. It like, you know why? Like I just listen and I just feel cheerful. Like I just like, I'm like, we're talking about plants and like, we're just like happy and it's green. And my happy places currently are the parks in my area. So like when you talk about plants, it honestly kind of like wherever I am, I kind of go to like what it feels like to walk in those places. Cause like that is where my mindset goes when I just hear you and your guests talk about nature is like, I automatically start thinking about that. So I'm a huge fan of your podcast as well. And I appreciate that you make it accessible. Like I'm in psychology. I took one evolutionary biology class in my bio major. And like, I didn't take any plant, anything. I kill everything that I touch, but it's really accessible material, which I think is really important for science. So you are doing amazing things as well. I will reiterate to everyone listening, go listen to Plantthropology, even if you're not a plant person. You might be.
People just don't know it yet. I say it all the time. Everyone loves plants. They just don't know it yet.
See, my thing is I love plants, but I hate bugs. So I'm working on that. We need like a bug prof. I've got to, like, one. I'll send your way.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Do you really? Yeah. I need it. Yeah. I need the exposure. Amazing. Well, Vikram, thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast episode. My gosh, it's time to go. Do you have any last words to say to everyone?
I think we summed it up, but no, I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, Vikram, thank you for the millionth time for being a guest. Listeners, thank you for continuing to listen to the podcast that I started during quarantine, and I will talk to you all next week. Hashtag bye. You can connect with Dear Grad Student on Twitter at Dear Grad Student, on Instagram at Dear Grad Student Pod, and on Facebook at Dear Grad Student. Everything that you need for the podcast can be found on the podcast website at deargradstudent.com. If you're looking for merch, you can go to the website, click merch in the menu at the top, or look me up on Redbubble. If you just want to listen to me ramble online, you can find me on Twitter at Alana_Gloger. That's ELANA_GLOGER. And of course, everything for this podcast is made possible by the amazing podcast patrons. If you want to help out, you can join them at patreon.com/deargradstudent for $1, $3, $5, or $10 a month. If you want to help out the podcast in other ways, you can leave a review. Best place for that is Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Google Podcasts. Be sure that you are following Dear Grad Student on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you find your other favorite shows to be sure that you are notified when each episode goes live. As a reminder, all resources and links mentioned in today's episode can be found in the description. And until next time, warmest regards, best wishes, sincerely, Alana.